The pencils are sharp. The brackets are ready. Your winners are selected, and the bets are on the table. That's right, it's time for March Mammal Madness. Where we pit the world's mightiest and even smallest mammals to see who will succeed and be crowned the best of the animal kingdom. Yeah. Here's Kristen Bry, Brian Noonan, and Rhea Riley.
I was waiting. It's very exciting.
Very exciting.
You should be very happy. Just to bring you up to date, March Mammal Madness is laid out just like the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournament. It starts with four regions, starts with 64 teams, and winnows down the winners to one champion. In the first couple rounds, it was neutral battlefields. Well, that's not true. The lowest seeded animal was the home team and got to battle on their habitat. Now we are getting to the point where there will be four random habitats chosen at random. That's why they call them random habitats, by the scientists who are doing this. So we just finished the round two.
So now we're down to 16.
We're officially in the
Sweet 16.
The Sweet 16, and then those games will be played tonight. And tomorrow night, they will play the Elite Trait.
Trait. And then the Final Roar.
Yes, the Final Roar. And then the big championships are next week. So last week, we posted all three of our brackets and a sample bracket for you to get. And Rhea, how do people get those brackets?
You can text MAMMAL, M-A-M-M-A-L, to our talk and text line, 855-616-1620. Again, that's 855-616-1620. There you're going to have a drop down or a PDF you can print out to play the bracket and then also see all of our three brackets.
Right. How are your brackets doing?
So I got this, now that we're in the Sweet 16, I have 11 out of 16 correct. It was interesting because doesn't seem like there was that many upsets.
No.
Like just like the men's tournament this year, not a lot of Cinderella teams, if any. There's not been that many upsets. And so there was, I think that maybe is because, like you said, in that round, the lower seed got to be on their turf, giving them obviously the upper hand. So I have 11 out of 16 correct.
Very nice.
Oh, I didn't count mine like that. I just kind of crossed them off.
Well, I crossed them off, but I know who I've still got. I have 12.
So you know how many you got correct?
I can count real fast.
Okay. How many do you have correct?
I
have
12
Ryan?
Correct. The big one that hurt me was the Thornold's deer in the same and different category.
Yeah.
I had the deer going all the way to the Final Four.
Oh,
so
wow.
The deer has let me down. But three of my Final Four picks are still in it. My champion pick, the polar bear, is still doing good. I was a little one of the ones that I got beat. The narwhal advanced to beat the
seal. Which is great, because I have the narwhal winning the whole thing.
I know you did. So you moved up. Hey. That bracket, tuxedo style, didn't do well, because I had the seal lost and the yak lost for me.
Yeah, the yak was my big upset.
Yeah. All right, and the one that really, we're still bothered by this. We still don't understand.
The ginkgo?
The ginkgo.
How does a plant beat a tortoise?
See, I thought it was a whale. I triple checked and researched. I thought it was a whale because they have something called like the ginkgo biloba whale or something. And they said that's not it. At least ChatGPT said it was not it. So I don't get how a tree is winning.
Because it's in the roots and relics division. That's all I can figure. And they're plant roots that are almost indestructible, I guess. That's from what I read.
Because it's got a number one seed.
Right.
It must be really tough. Well, if I tell you what, if they make it into the Elite Trait, I'm done, because I have now the seal beating the ginkgo in tonight's games.
Right, same.
And I have the shark beating the gar in tonight's games.
Which is an alligator.
Yes.
Well, they're all ugly.
An alligator gar, yes.
I would recommend, even if you're not going to fill out a bracket, if you are at all interested in animals and the variety of animals that actually exist in the world.
Right.
Checking out some of these animals that they put, like, I've never even heard of them, but some of them, especially the ones in the Roots and Relics that
are really ugly.
Really, really ugly.
Really ugly.
Because they haven't evolved. They haven't changed. They're the same as they were the prehistoric creatures.
I want one of those timelines that tells you, like, this is where it was and so what it is today, especially for the tree. Because if it's not a whale, tell me how this is
definitely
a mammal,
not a whale.
Today.
I remember looking it up.
Okay.
And that's why they're teamed together, the ginkgo and the rhizo, because their bark, their roots, their tree stumps, basically.
Like, when does that get a heartbeat?
It doesn't. But that's why it's in roots and rocks. Because there was a couple of fossils in this category,
too. So I feel like it's kind of a misnomer. Like, they call it mammal madness for the alliteration,
mm-hmm.
but it's not actually all animals.
No, but last year there was a big controversy. Because fewer mammals were included, and a non-mammal won. So this year, Arizona State, which is where this begins, they've made an effort to make this a very mammal-forward tournament. Those are their words, not mine.
Yet there's a tree. So
there is a root, but I guess it goes with that. Because, yeah, a shark, sharks and seals aren't mammals.
No,
no, I don't believe.
Certainly not. No. I mean, I'd rather have a squid win than a tree.
Oh, if the tree gets down, first of all, the tree may make it through this one against the seal. Mm. The tree can't beat a shark.
It's not a real shark, though.
What if the
yes,
habitat's
it is. It's
on
a,
the,
it's
on
a
land.
Frilled shark.
What if the habitat's on land?
I don't believe it.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Then the shark will definitely
but
lose.
But what if the habitat is the water and the
that,
tree?
Yeah, but no, you just said that there's no way the tree can beat a shark. And I'm just saying, with the unknown here is what habitat they're in.
Kristen, when I'm talking sports, it's all hot takes. You don't argue with hot takes. You just go with the hot take. The hot take
is
the shark.
I thought that's all they do on sports talk radio
right,
is
that's
argue.
Is all they do.
Yeah.
Hot take.
Fight with each other.
No, but I'm saying I'm not going to back down even when faced with logic.
Oh,
yes, sure, your
it.
Argument makes sense. I don't care. I've got my hot take. The shark is beating the roots. Prove me wrong. That's
okay,
all I can say.
I guess we'll see.
I guess we'll see is right.
I'm already out there because I definitely did not choose the tree to go very far
at
despite
all.
I didn't either. I thought it was done. I thought it was done in the first round.
Should have known it.
How are you feeling about your narwhal versus a zebra tonight?
I'm feeling good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
That unicorn of the sea is going to kick some butt.
Wow. All right. Well, let's hope.
Do we know what biosphere the ginkgo and the seal were in, just out of curiosity?
That was in the, ginkgo, and that was in, they were in their own, because they were the number one seed, which we probably should have taken into account.
You know what?
The tortoise was a, the tortoise was an 8 seed. We should have gone with the one, but...
I'm not picking a tree.
I'm not picking a root. Pick it something else.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll call it a whale.
All right. Well,
so we're talking about this again on Friday?
Friday, because mm-hmm. we'll have the Elite Eight or the Elite Trait winners. I'm hoping your narwhal wins tonight, because then it will be head-to-head, you and me, narwhal versus polar bear, on tomorrow night.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. We'll see if the shark wins, too, and my hot takes just go, because I'm taking polar bear all the way. All right. When we come back, there's more. And don't forget, text MAMMAL. That's two M's. MAMMAL, not EL, to 855-616-1620. The Sighting Unlimited talk and text MAMMAL Madness Hotline.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
I'm Brian Noonan. We will not be here tomorrow, and it is for a good reason.
The best reason.
Because
Brewers are back, baby.
Brewers are back. Baseball, the regular season. Technically, it started with that team from 80 miles south in Japan. But the real season starts tomorrow. The Brewers are going to be in New York taking on the Yankees. Supposed to be nice weather in New York, so no chance of a rainout or a postponement, which is great. And I saw this in the Journal Sentinel. Now, you're a big sports fan.
Yeah, I appreciate others, sports. I don't know a lot about sports, right? Like, I'm not going to be able to give you a rundown. I'm not like Dom, where I'm going to be able to give you a rundown of what to be looking for this year. Like, no one's getting their advice or their insight from me.
Well,
but I like sports.
I'm the same way. Like, I'll talk to Matzik about, I'll get stuff from Matzik and little tips. I do know this because I read it in the Journal Sentinel. I'm not, an encyclopedic fountain of information. But I know that the Brewers have... since 2017, they have not lost fewer than 86 games in the season, which is pretty good. They've made the playoffs the last few mm-hmm. years. They haven't done very well once they got there,
nope.
but they made it. So, of course, with opening day on the horizon, they asked the sports people at the Journal Sentinel, all the people who cover the team, to give their predictions. Not overwhelmingly favorable for the Brewers. Todd Rosiak doesn't see them making the playoffs at all, missing the playoffs for the first time since 2022. He says they have a record of 84-78. That's what I don't get. When you got a 162-game season and you're going to, but again, we love the sports guys because they make hot predictions. They don't care. I'm just going to pick two numbers that add up to 162, and we're going to go with that. But then Kurt Hogg and J.R. Radcliffe, rather, both have the Brewers getting to the wild card.
Okay.
J.R., I misread him. He says they don't make the playoffs either.
Okay.
82-80. But Hogg says they make it to the wild card. So we'll see. I don't know. A lot of games to play. A lot of games.
They also predicted that the Wisconsin Badger men's basketball team was going to be 12th in the Big Ten, and they obviously proved that to be very wrong far as how well they did and how well they almost won that game on Saturday, which they did not deserve to win. But the fact that it was even as close when the buzzer hit. But anyways, so Monday, big day,
yes.
Obviously, the home opener. So I'm trying to come up with, because we don't have a show that day, because the game will
be out and about doing.
So I've been tasked with making some shocking social media content, and I'm thinking about bringing back the scavenger hunt.
Ooh.
For people who are unfamiliar, during the RNC and DNC last year, I did a scavenger hunt of things that I had to go find or people I tried to interview. And then we thought maybe we would bring that back. So if I were to do a scavenger hunt for opening day at American Family Field, what should I be on the lookout for?
You got to be on the lookout for, remember that guy we ran into last year?
Oh, the guy who wears the uniform?
The whole uniform.
Oh,
and he wears
that's
it,
a really
he wears
good one.
It every home game, he wears the full uniform.
Okay, I'll add that to the list. But so if you have recommendations, the Sighting Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620. What should I add to my scavenger hunt for Monday? But, you know, I feel like, or like grading tailgates is another option as far as bringing a rubric.
Yeah.
Like creating a rubric and grading people's tailgates to see which one's the best.
I was thinking something tailgate related. Somebody who's not cooking brats or a weird meat other than a brat or a hot dog or a burger, which are going to be
for the scavenger hunt. Okay, so something like an exotic meat, like someone who's at the Wisconsin State Fair, alligator toes or something like that.
Somebody shows up for the game and they go, you know what, I got boa constrictor right here. Yeah, it tastes just like
chewy chicken.
Yeah, you got to pull it apart. There's some bones, but you're going to really, really enjoy it. Or somebody who just brings, you know, tofu.
Okay.
I get it. You're a vegetarian. We don't care. Go away. So those are
top shelf liquor.
Oh,
like besides just a Miller High Life or a Miller Lite,
a Bloody Mary with the most ingredients.
There you go. All right, let us know what should I look at for my scavenger hunt. But first, ABC News and local headlines. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And you know this, every day we're being bombarded by reports of actions and behaviors that cause us all to go, that's not normal. However, there is an increased effort for some to try to convince us that these shocking behaviors are normal, and some people start believing that the abnormal is now normal. We're also being fed disinformation on a daily basis that's causing many people to believe things that just aren't true. Joining us to talk about all of this is Dr. Joe Pierre. He's a psychiatrist who cares for adults requiring hospitalization for mental illness. He serves as chief of inpatient unit at UCSF Langley Porter Psychiatric Hospital. He has an academic expertise in false beliefs, and he is the author of False: How Mistrust, Disinformation, and Motivated Reasoning Make Us Believe Things That Aren't True. Dr. Pierre, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and good to join you again. It's been a little while.
It has been a little while. We spoke, Kristen, I spoke to Dr. Pierre, but remember when QAnon was the big thing?
Is it still remnants of that anywhere?
I don't know. We'll find out. You can ask. That's what I talked to Dr. Pierre last. Let's start today with hypernationalism, that idea.
Hypernormalization.
You are correct. Can you define that for us and give us some examples of where we might be seeing it now?
Well, I would just define it as normalizing what's not normal or what shouldn't be normal. You know, after the election, I wrote a piece in part because a lot of people asked me a question of, you know, what can we do to maintain our mental health now that the country is going in a very different direction? And I offer two pieces of advice that kind of sound a little contradictory. One is to refuse to be surprised and expect the worst, but at the same time, not to normalize. So if I talk about the second part, normalization, you know, what we're seeing is this pushing of what we call the Overton window, right? The idea that the more outrageous what you're proposing or the more outrageous what you do, then over time what happens is things that seem a little less outrageous seem to be okay and seem to be normal. And I think it's very important that we don't let ourselves allow that to be happen, allow ourselves to let that happen. So when I say we should also refuse to be surprised and expect the worst, but not normalize, what I'm suggesting is this is a good way to have a mental outlook that's needed to become active and to help us with this feeling of, you know, can we do something about it? And I think the answer is yes.
So Dr. Pierre, kind of, it feels like there's two different groups when it comes to hypernormalization. There's the group that believes the disinformation and they believe something that is actually false. And then there is people who don't feel like they know that it's false, but there doesn't feel like they can do anything. And so it's like they just slowly erode their outrage because this is just keeps happening. And so what determines how people either buy into it or they don't? And then for the people, like, how do you fight against the complacency, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so, you know, in this book, the subtitle of the book, as mentioned, has to do with how mistrust, disinformation, and motivated reasoning lead us to believe things that aren't true. So we live now in this country that, of course, is very polarized, not only in terms of our politics, but polarized over specific beliefs, like, for example, you know, is climate change real or is it a hoax? And so I think those three components really help us understand who's going to stand on one side of those so-called debates versus another. What informational sources do we trust or mistrust? How much misinformation or disinformation, that is deliberate misinformation, are we exposed to? And finally, motivated reasoning, which is a kind of just a fancy term that means when we process information, whether or not we rate the information as good, reliable, high-quality information versus not. And what we all tend to do is we rate information as excellent information when it supports what we already want believe or what we want to believe. Now, I think the complacency thing is the key question here. You know, I personally don't consider myself a Democrat. I don't consider myself – I've never really been affiliated with a political party. But I am very concerned about a movement towards authoritarianism here in the United States. And I think we have to believe what authoritarian leaders tell us they're going to do. And we shouldn't be surprised when they do it. Otherwise, it becomes too easy to convince ourselves that this is no big deal or something terrible isn't really going to happen or there isn't more and worse to come. And so that's the complacency piece that you're talking about. You know, much of what's happening now was laid out and is spelled out in Project 2025. But many of us were able to believe when Trump said he didn't know anything about it or told ourselves that that wasn't going to happen. And so that's the complacency part where we really want to not allow ourselves to normalize that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Now, you touched on this a little bit, but I just wanted you to explain it a little further for people because it seems like disinformation and misinformation to a lot of people are interchangeable, but there is a difference, correct?
There is a difference. So disinformation just simply means information that's not accurate, that's false. You know, sometimes we might call that fake news. Okay. And we're all at times guilty of spreading misinformation, right? We see a headline and it seems very interesting, and before we go through carefully and read it, we might send that to someone else or we'll like it and retweet it or that kind of thing. So we're all guilty of sometimes spreading information that's not true, but we're not doing that deliberately because we know the information is not true. And so that's what disinformation is. Disinformation that's purposely crafted with the knowing that the information's not accurate and sending it out anyway because of some benefit to the person sending it out, which usually has to do with financial profit or gaining power or political power and that sort of thing.
Dr. Joseph Pierre is our guest. His new book, False, How Mistrust, Disinformation, and Motivated Reasoning Make Us Believe Things That Aren't True. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk more about the book and why people are believing things that aren't false. It's spanning the state.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
I'm Brian Noonan. We're talking to Dr. Joseph Pierre, a psychiatrist. His new book, False, How Mistrust, Disinformation, and Motivated Reasoning Make Us Believe Things Aren't True. Joe, this is something, I know it's easy, it might even be lazy, but a lot of us do it. People who believe conspiracy theories or disinformation, we tend to lump them in as, oh, those people are nuts, they're crazy. Maybe we even say that they're stupid or ignorant. That's not necessarily the case, right?
Absolutely not. If you look at surveys and polls in the U.S. as well as all over the world about how many people believe in conspiracy theories, it's the majority of the population. Latest polls in the U.S. show that almost 70-some percent of us believe in at least one conspiracy theory. So I think we really want to resist the temptation to think of people who believe conspiracy theories or any other kinds of false beliefs as some others who are mentally ill or stupid or that sort of thing. We all have that vulnerability. That said, I think it's important to call out beliefs when they are false to understand what gives rise to that and to intervene so that we're not acting either in our individual lives or in terms of public policy based on things that aren't real, things that aren't true.
Dr. Pierre, is there some people that are more susceptible to believing things that are patently false? Like, is there any patterns that we see for people who, like we were talking about QAnon, that are more likely to join QAnon or more likely to be vaccine resistant or hesitant? Or is it kind of random?
Well, there are some, I'll call them psychological quirks or cognitive biases that are associated with a greater tendency to believe in fake news or conspiracy theories. Some of those things include, for example, needs for control or needs for uniqueness. This is the idea that people who gravitate towards conspiracy theories feel like they've stumbled upon some truth that no one else knows about, and that can be sort of invigorating. But to go back what I was saying before, I think a more universal and helpful way to understand this, and particularly now in terms of who believes something that's not true versus not, it's really best predicted by those three things I mentioned: mistrust, misinformation, and motivated reasoning. Who do we trust or not? Who do we trust or not? Right? If we don't trust the CDC, if we don't trust Anthony Fauci, if we don't trust the World Health Organization, then we start turning away to other sources of information and sometimes disinformation. And there, for example, with vaccines, there's plenty of misinformation and deliberate disinformation that's out there in the world. But it's really motivated reasoning that more than anything else predicts what we believe. If somebody affiliates with one political party, we all can pretty much say, you know, what does that person believe on these hot button core issues? And so a lot of what we're seeing now is just following what the party's telling us to do. And on the conservative side, a lot of it is just following what Trump tells people, you know, is reality, and people just tend to follow that because they trust him, and they know that part of their party affiliation is that they should support those talking points.
One of the things I find hard to understand, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, what drives somebody to hold on to beliefs that are demonstrably false, even while they're being harmed by those beliefs or after they've been harmed by them? And I'm thinking about the tragic story of the young child who died from measles in Texas. His parents came out afterward and said, "We still do not believe in vaccines." That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so this is definitely something I address in the book. It's hard to summarize in a couple minutes, so I encourage people to read
the book.
But I will say that one of the key examples that I talk about in the book is something that in psychology we call cognitive dissonance, right? We've all heard that word.
Sure.
All it really means is that if I have a belief and then it sort of starts to butt up against reality, meaning I'm starting to see counter evidence, and particularly if I've invested all my energy into this belief, usually the way we resolve that tension, that discomfort we have when we're contradicted, is to just double down on the belief. So if you talk, I'm going to say hypothetically, about parents whose child died because they weren't vaccinated, there's sort of two choices. One is to say, oh my gosh, I was wrong and I contributed to death of my child. Or you double down and you say, no, I wasn't wrong. I was right, you know, I was right all along. And then you go out and look for information, and there are you know, groups, including those affiliated with RFK Jr., saying, oh, well, the measles isn't caused by lack of vaccination. It's actually caused by the vaccine, which, of course, makes no sense because the people that have died weren't vaccinated. Even so, there are these narratives out there that can then make you feel less, you don't have to admit that you're wrong. And that's something that nobody really wants to do.
How would you suggest for those of us who want to not fall prey to some of the cognitive vulnerabilities that all of us have, you know, confirmation bias, all of these different things. What is the tips you have for people who want to try to parse out truth from fiction?
Well, I think the first step is what we said earlier, is not to make the mistake that we all tend to make, which is to only imagine that this idea of believing things that aren't true is something that our ideological opposites do, right? You know, who among us would say, well, I'm 100% right about everything, right? Hopefully none of us say that, although maybe I know a couple people that do. So the first step is to sort of look in the mirror and recognize that we all have that vulnerability. In the book, I talk about something I call the Holy Trinity of Truth Detection, which is really based on these three principles. The first is intellectual humility, and that's what I just said, which is being able to admit that maybe we're not 100% right. Maybe we could be wrong. The second facet is cognitive flexibility, the ability to listen to other people, to consider that they might be right, to respect other opinions, to have a discussion about it, and to possibly change our beliefs if the evidence doesn't support what we do believe. And the third piece would be I'm actually blanking on the third piece. It'll come to me. Oh, I got it. Sorry. Analytical thinking, which always sounds like it means you're smart or you can do calculus. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It just means when we encounter information, slowing down, pumping the brakes, and saying, you know what, maybe this information isn't true. And before I share it or I like it, maybe I should read the information first. Think about it, and especially if it's something I really want to believe, maybe pump the brakes and say, you know, maybe it's not. And studies have shown pretty clearly that if you just slow that process down and you don't just react on gut intuition, what Stephen Colbert called truthiness, the idea that it feels right, then we are much better at discerning what is true or not true.
Well, this has been fascinating. We were looking forward to talking to you again, Dr. Pierre. It is the new book is False, How Mistrust, Disinformation, and Motivated Reasoning Make Us Believe Things That Aren't True. Get it wherever you get fine books. And there are a lot more questions. I'm sure this is not a subject that is going to go away, so we look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Look forward to it as well. Thank
Take
you.
Care. That's Dr. Joe Pierre. Again, the book, False, How Mistrust, Disinformation, and Motivated Reasoning Make Us Believe Things That Aren't True. What is true is we have to take a break because it's spanning the state.
I believe it's time for me to fly.
All right, well, we are out until Friday because tomorrow at this time, the Milwaukee Brewers will be in New York taking on the dreaded Yankees.
The dreaded Yankees.
Yes. So good luck to the Brewers. Have a great opening day far away. Wisconsin's Afternoon News is next.
See ya.